What's up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Indeed.com. Rapid growth for your business doesn't have to come with growing pains. When you have ambitious hiring goals, you need a partner to help you get there. You need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. So instead of spending hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills, you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match assessments and virtual interviews. I'm going to tell you even more about all the powerful tools within Indeed during the break in the show. But if you want to get started right now, Indeed is going to help you make every dollar count, because when you sponsor a job, you only pay for quality applications from resumes in their database matching your job description. Just visit Indeed.com/iLab to start hiring now. That's Indeed.com/iLab. One more time, Indeed.com/ILAB. Terms and conditions apply. Costs per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, let's kick off this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses? Episode 249 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I am Derek, and in Los Angeles, Johnny is on the road, soon to be back in Ukraine. But where are you at right now, Johnny?
I'm waiting for my visa documents still. I'm still in the UK. Actually, I'm in this little seaside town known as the gayest town of the UK.
You know what I'm saying? Gayest town in the UK. I do not know where you are.
Brighton Beach.
Brighton. I was going to say Brighton because you know why? The only town I know that's on a beach is Brighton. Well, actually, I think Liverpool is too, I'm not really a beach, I guess, whatever you would call that.
I mean,
but Brighton was the first thing that came to mind.
I mean, England is technically an island, so there's a lot of beaches, but yeah, Brighton's true, definitely, I guess. Definitely the case.
I guess I always associate London with it, and London's, you know, kind of in the middle.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so, you know, it's been an interesting week out here, just kind of hanging out. You know, it's kind of part sightseeing, part eating, you know, fish and chips, and part waiting around.
Yeah, I want to go back to the UK. I've only been to London. I never got to venture outside of that. I thought it'd be cool to go up to like Scotland and things like that. One thing you alluded to last episode is that you have now been granted permanent residency in the Ukraine. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So I guess rewind a year and a half, during COVID, I think 2020, 2021, I wanted to go somewhere, but I didn't want to go back to the US. But because of all the travel restrictions, you can only go to countries where you have residency or a passport. And that's what I decided, you know what? I don't want to ever be stuck in the situation where I have to go back to the US or, you know, I mean, but yeah, basically I just really didn't want to go back. You know, I was like, where can I get permanent residency and not invest $500,000 that I didn't want to spend? And Ukraine had a program for $100,000. You can invest it really in anything and you can apply. Turns out it was a pain in the ass, lots of paperwork. It took longer than expected, especially with the war happening. But finally, they approved my status. I just need to go do some paperwork at an embassy outside of Ukraine. So then I can go back into Ukraine with this new paperwork and then pick it up.
So essentially, they haven't rushed this through because the war's on, right? This, let's say the war never happened. You still could have been eligible for this.
Yeah, like nothing has changed. If anything, it slowed it down a bit, because every time there's an air raid, which could happen sometimes a few times a day, everybody has to stop working and they all have to go to the basement until it's over.
Sounds like a fun day at work.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine the way that the U.S. government is so slow when they can actually work a full day without running to the air raid basement. Adding that into the mix and governments has got to be a really slow process. So were you eligible for this immediately when you bought your place and it's been 18 months, or was there always some kind of waiting period?
There's always a 1 year waiting period. And I actually asked the immigration, I said, oh, okay, it takes up to a year. Is there a chance it'll be done in 3 months or 6 months? And he's like, no, 1 year.
And no, I said, listen, 1 year. Yeah.
And I was like, do you just wait until the 360th day and then process it? Like, what are you doing? And I think it's just to see if you can live in Ukraine for a year and not fuck up.
You know, that's a good point, actually, because it's like, how serious are you about being here? If you can do a year in a place, you're probably gonna stay there and you're pretty serious about it. But I'd imagine there's a good number of people that after a month or two, they're like, you know, maybe this wasn't the right place for me.
Yeah, that or within a year, they end up, you know, committing some crimes or like running out of money or something.
Getting in with the mob in Ukraine. It can happen.
Yeah. So, you know, luckily, I've been pretty good. I think the only time I ever even thought about committing a crime, I was coming back from California, and there, you know, weed is legal, and had this little vape pen that had like, you know, 1 gram or something of marijuana. And I texted my lawyer saying, hey, do you think it's okay if I bring this back? Because
how does that even cross your mind that that's okay, Johnny?
Well, because in Ukraine, anything less than 5 grams is not a crime. So I thought, you know, it's probably fine. And luckily, she's very thorough. She says, let me get back to you. She does the research, writes me back saying, if you had it on you in Ukraine, it wouldn't be a big deal. It wouldn't even be a crime. But the fact that you're trafficking it from another country through the airport, that would be a crime.
Yes. Brittany Griner probably had the same thought. And I guess she didn't have as good a lawyer in Russia. So don't do that. Any bosses out there, don't even chance it.
Yeah, and it's also a reason why you should have a lawyer, especially in this process. There was zero chance I could have done this on my own, even with a translator. You know, it's one of those things that would have been really tempting, that if I was married to a Ukrainian and you could just do it, you know, kind of through through her as a translator, it would have been a nightmare, because even with a lawyer, it's been a nightmare.
Yeah, I remember even when I was there seeing you, you had to go see your lawyer a couple times. You had just got some kind of ID card you got there. It's a lot of steps to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, hopefully it'll be all worth it once I get it. And it's kind of also a good time to go back, because I can bring US dollar or euros when I go back and get a better exchange rate than if I had just pulled money out of the ATM or used my credit card there.
That's a good call. Is there any kind of limit on how much cash you could bring in? Are they actually checking this?
You can bring $10,000 in. And I would probably never carry that more than that anyways. The problem is, you know, it's actually pretty hard to get $10,000 with the cash. Like, especially, yeah.
It is super hard. I know someone that actually just bought a new car here in Los Angeles. You're going to like this story, Johnny.
Okay.
So this lady walks in, right? This is in Beverly Hills. It's the Mercedes dealership. My friend had actually found a Honda at the Mercedes dealership. So I think they were just like, she got a good deal, because I think they were just like, get this POS off our lot. Right.
Uh-huh.
And a lady walks in, says she wants a new G-Wagon G63, the top of the line one, $260,000. She says, no problem. Has a bodyguard guy come in, suitcase of cash, $260,000 in cash.
That's crazy.
It was like a pile of money. And I was like, even 10,000 is like a stack for
sure. It's a lot of money. I wonder. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even want to think about where people get all this cash from. But yeah, for me, I'll probably bring a couple grand back, because on the ground, the official exchange rate when I went back to Ukraine a few months ago was, I think, 27 to the dollar. But on the ground, I can get, I think it was like 32 or something. So you get like a, you know, at least a 10 or 15% discount. Now, I haven't checked recently, but I think it keeps creeping up. So I think it's like 40 to the dollar now or something.
Wow. So that's even higher than before the war, because I was there in 2021 and I think it was around 33 or 34. So you're saying that you can actually get even more money for even better value now after the war started and while it's going on.
Yeah. And I think what they did was they eventually like raised the official rate to, you know, somewhat match. So it went up to 36 to the dollar. But then as soon as they do that, then the black market rate jumps too. So then you're always getting a better deal with cash. So right now, cash is king in Ukraine. So if you can bring it in, you're going to get a 10% discount on everything.
That's really good information to know because, yeah, even if you're just pulling it out of an ATM there, you're going to get ripped off somehow. So bring cash if you're going to a foreign country to get a better exchange rate.
Yeah.
Or US dollars, at least I should say. Bring US dollars.
US dollars and euros both get good money. And actually, euros, for some reason, were still trading higher than the dollar, even though the euro was weaker. So it's kind of this weird thing where they just kind of always assumed euros are strong.
That's why I don't always listen to these like exchanges and stuff. And then you go in real life to a store and they're like, no, that's not the case. Well, I'm looking at the exchange rate right now. It's actually, yeah, one US dollar to 1.02 euro. So the euros recovered slightly. It was 1-to-1 at least a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I remember buying something. No, I think I withdrew $100 or something, 100 euros. No, I withdrew 200 euros, and I was charged $199. And I was like, I'll do this all day.
Just make $1 all day.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is one way to kind of, you know, not invest in Ukraine, but to get a good deal on Ukraine. But I think this episode, we're going to talk about some ways that potentially you can, you know, invest in Ukraine, not only to help the economy and help rebuild, but also potentially make a crap ton of money or lose a crap ton of money, depending on what happens.
So depending on what happens is the big key. And I think where the vast majority of people listening to this are nervous is obviously there's a war going on with Russia. We're recording this the end of September in 2022. We are, 7 months into this now? And it kind of seemed like a stalemate here the last couple of months. But now Putin is kind of at it again. I don't know. He called for calling up reserve backup to help in Ukraine, which you could view either as a bad sign for Ukraine or a good sign that he can't really handle what he thought would be an easy takeover in Ukraine. Johnny, you obviously have a better pulse on this. What are you seeing currently with the war, and what are the chances that Ukraine can get out of this?
Yeah, so up until September, Ukraine is basically playing defense, and with probably the help of the U.S. in terms of like secure intelligence, and definitely with, you know, weapons, including all the NATO countries who donated, you know, really good weapons to Ukraine was able to take back pretty much more land in like 2 or 3 weeks than Russia's been able to gain in 5 months. So the tides have turned. Unofficial estimates show that half of the Russian army is now either dead or captured. A lot of their weapons are, you know, and tanks are taken. So finally, tides are turning. The dangerous part of that is Russia has to retaliate because now they've been embarrassed, you know, and, right, you know, Putin is losing power. So he either has to just give up, which I don't think he'll do, or he's going to have to double down, which is why I think he's doing this mobilization and, you know, trying to bring 300,000 new recruits.
Yeah, I definitely see it more that way, that he needs help and he needs as many people as he can get, whereas Russia is trying to spin it as, you know, this is just part of everyday protocol to take this over. It doesn't look good for them, but there's still so many other things I think he could use. You know, he's threatened nuclear war, which obviously would be horrible for the entire world, and let's hope that never happens. But they do have additional weapons at their disposal that you got to keep in mind.
Yeah, that is the one real scary thing. I had a pretty in-depth conversation about this with some smart people, and we were, you know, I was saying, you know, like, what do you think would happen if Russia decided to actually launch a nuclear missile? And this kind of the smartest people in the room said he can't do it because if he tries, I mean, right now every single Western country, every NATO country has all their anti-air defense pointed at Russia. Like, you know, they probably have a good idea, you know, where they would, you know, they would send this nuke from. And it's in NATO's best interest and Europe's best interest not to have a nuclear disaster on the like the center of Europe, because like it's gonna fuck up everyone, you know. Like,
I think it's like, for the world's best interest that doesn't happen, but yeah,
you know, because they're so close. I mean, like, even if it was just Poland, for example, or just like, you know, a few countries kind of nearby, they don't want that nuclear, you know, airborne particles floating toward, you know, towards them. It can also float the other way towards Russia as well. I think they know that. So, and even if the West doesn't respond nuclearly, which I don't think they would actually do, people said that, you know, they don't need nuclear weapons to destroy Russia. Like,
no,
like they have long, yeah, like there's plenty of long range missiles that can just, you know, go in and just destroy every possible Russian military base, you know, including the ones in, you know, Moscow and St. Petersburg, and just do a lot of destruction without even resorting to nuclear.
Yeah, I think that's one good thing that's come out of this war, is that big bad Russia isn't so big and bad as we thought. Because think of their situation where the U.S. would have had to attack Ukraine. Not to say anything bad about Ukraine, but I think that'd be a pretty easy mission for the U.S. Army to take care of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we've kind of shown that the U.S. Army and kind of the NATO allies are stronger than anyone expected, and that Russia's a lot weaker. I've heard that our ground troops in the U.S. aren't very good, like comparatively, you know, because we don't really train with tanks and soldiers kind of, you know, walking across fields, but our airspace, you know, superiority, our missile defense, all that is a superior intelligence. It's just light years ahead.
Oh, our technology is so much further ahead. I mean, when you see these stories of Russian tanks and trucks still that were serving during the Soviet Union in the 80s and things like that, like think of just a basic car from the 80s compared to any new car today. And there's no comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if history repeats itself, which it will, a lot of money is both lost and made during wars. I mean, you know, especially at the end of wars, countries either basically collapse financially or they have a complete run up. I think with the way things are going, Russia is going to collapse financially, and Ukraine is going to have a huge run up.
And let's look at history. Think of World War II. That's what really made the U.S. the superpower of the world, coming out of that war, and how we took care of other countries and how we treated them. So the reasoning for World War II to happen was because after World War I, the world completely punished Germany and killed their entire economy. So the entire population was just fed up, and, you know, they resorted to having Hitler as a source of, you know, power and hopefulness, which obviously didn't happen. But we treated Germany very differently after World War II than we did in World War I. You know, we helped boost their economy, get everything going. And look at Germany now. They're, you know, a top 10 probably financial country because of that, you know. And I think we could see something similar come out of Ukraine if they end up winning this war, is they're going to have the support of the Western world behind them to help their economy get back to where it was, and probably even stronger because the spotlight on them is so much bigger now. And at the same time, Russia will be extremely punished and they are not going to do so well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually been a slow, I don't know what the best analogy would be, but it was kind of this slow motion car wreck watching what's happening in Russia, because people in Moscow and St. Petersburg, kind of the only real two metropolis cities in Russia, they've been living life pretty much normally since the sanctions have happened. If anything, their dollar is stronger now because Russia artificially propped up the ruble, even though it should be free falling. So they feel rich and they're like, oh, life is good. You know, they felt like life goes on. The sanctions barely affected them, but you know, meanwhile, you know, people in the east or people in the east of Russia, but also, and, you know, people in Ukraine have felt it, you know, a lot quicker. I think that the people in Moscow and St. Petersburg are finally starting to feel it, especially with this mobilization. They realize that they're not safe, and right. that eventually the exchange rate for the ruble is going to catch up, because there's no reason why it should be where it is. And even the Russian stock market, it should be collapsed. It's the only reason it's not is they don't let any non-Russian investors pull out their money or sell.
That's a good point. And do you have any idea of how there's a lot of talk in the news that, you know, China is kind of supporting Russia financially to help them not go into default? Do you have any insight into that?
Yeah, Russia's and China has a kind of a weird relationship where I think that China is kind of wants to support Russia because they don't want, you know, because, you know, like your enemy, you know, if the U.S. were is the enemy of Russia, the U.S. is the enemy of China, then kind of support each other. But I think China also realizes that Russia is a terrible best friend to have. So I think they're trying to keep things on the down low. There were there were some shells that were sent to Ukraine and destroyed, and some of them didn't explode. So you can see the writing on them, and they were in some kind of Chinese writing. Mm-hmm. So they either have had to come from China or from North Korea. For some reason.
Well, to be fair, everything comes from China, Johnny.
But I mean, these are like military shells. So, you know. Like, yeah, they're probably selling weapons to Russia, but nobody wants to admit it and say, like, nobody wants to say, yeah, we're helping them. You know, they'll do it for the money, but I don't think anyone's going to, you know, support them when it comes down to it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where that's a good analogy, that it's that friend you have, but you don't really want to admit that you have that friend. I think everyone's had those people in their life. It does kind of scare me, though, that China could use this basis to attack where Russia could attack Ukraine without essentially consequences and getting attacked by other nations, where China is kind of looking at this as a model for Taiwan, too.
Yeah. And thank God that Russia's losing this horribly, because that's made China realize, oh, crap, even if nobody comes and, you know, to rescue them, you know, militarily, they, you know, other countries can do things kind of under the table or with sanctions that'll screw you up.
Okay, so before we take a break, Johnny, let's get the rest of the war update from you, because in the second half of the episode, we're going to talk about reinvesting in Ukraine, how you can do so, how you can potentially make a lot of money, and what you're seeing out there. But before we can do that, we need to have an end to this war. So what do you see this looking like 6 months from now, maybe a year from now? Is Ukraine going to be victorious? What are you seeing out there?
Well, first, can't listen to my predictions, because I didn't think this war was going to happen in the first place.
Good point.
All right. You know, logically, it didn't make sense. I mean, this is why I didn't think it was going to happen, because I knew that Russia would, there's no way they could win this war. There's no way that they could take and hold Kyiv. There's no way that they would have the support of, you know, of the people, and that Ukraine would be way tougher to take, literally impossible to take and hold. So, turns out Russia's a lot crazier than we expected. So logically, what's going to happen is, you know, the people now that Putin's kind of ran out of the crazy 150,000, you know, or the conscripts, and they're going to have to start taking like normal people from the big cities. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to revolt. Nobody's going to show up. Nobody's going to want to fight this war, or they're going to find ways to get out of it. So the people are going to stop supporting the government. It only takes 1% of the Russian population to stand up against Putin and the regime to stop the war, because that's over a million people. And it's going to take a while, because, you know, kind of first off, Russians have so much propaganda, they're brainwashed, but also they have kind of the Russian police that'll break up protests. But eventually the tide's going to turn, and either the government is going to overthrow Putin, someone's going to assassinate him, or the people are involved. And I think that's going to come sooner than later. I don't see this war occurring even past 2023. Like, I if I was going to guess, I think this war is going to be over in a few months, hopefully by New Year's, but who knows? It'll probably drag on in some way. It'll probably become more of a small localized conflict just in Donetsk, like it was back in 2014.
Do you if we get a resolution to this war and some kind of peace agreement, do you foresee that Ukraine gets all the land that they had back, you know, maybe not Crimea or anything like that, but essentially whatever land was Ukraine 1 year ago, do you see them getting all that back?
I would hope so. But I mean, the reality is either this war continues to push. And the thing is, if Ukraine's going to push all the way to the original borders, they almost might as well push a little bit further and take back some other lands that maybe historically might've belonged to them, you know? So that would be a huge mess in terms of war, because then now you're not just defending and taking back your land, but you're actually going into Russia.
Maybe biting off more than you could chew at this point. I feel like, you know, they want to get back to where they were, but there's also that revenge side in you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a few months ago, I would have said even getting Crimea back would have been really hard. But now, actually, I think they will. So if I was going to predict, I think they actually would get Crimea back. I think they're going to get back most, if not all, of their original land, because that's what Ukraine wants. And then they're going to set up some very superior air defense so Russia can no longer attack with missiles. I think the U.S. is already sending some, but I think by the end of the year, they're going to have a lot more.
So Johnny says, we're putting it on record, the end of the year, the war will be over.
I'm saying I hope it'll be over.
Sorry, I'm not putting words in your mouth. That's a good spot to take a break, I think. We're going to cut to a sponsor really quick. We'll be right back. And Johnny's going to give us some ideas on how we could reinvest in Ukraine and potentially see big boss profits.
This week's episode of Invest Like a Boss is brought to you by our longest running sponsor and our friends over at Indeed.com. Rapid growth for your business doesn't have to come with growing pains. When you have ambitious hiring goals, you need a partner to help you get there. You need Indeed. And if you're like me and you hate waiting, Indeed's US data shows over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. Indeed even lets you do virtual interviews. That means you don't have to leave the site. You can do everything within Indeed. It saves you time. You can message, schedule, and interview top talent all in one place. Indeed makes it easy to connect with your applicants. No need to install anything extra. It works directly from your browser. So join the over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed's going to make it even easier to help you grow your business and make every dollar count. Because when you sponsor a job, you only pay for quality candidates from resumes in their database that match your job description. If you want to get started right now, just visit Indeed.com/iLab to start hiring. That's Indeed.com/iLab. One more time, Indeed.com/ILAB. Terms and conditions apply. Costs per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Johnny, I'm looking for ideas here. I got some cash. I could potentially lose it all, and I am aware of that, but mm-hmm. I could potentially make a lot of money on this situation in Ukraine. Where am I putting those dollars?
Well, first, if you could find out some way to short Russian stocks or short Russia, I would do that, because they're definitely going to lose out on this. But in terms of actually investing in Ukraine, I would say real estate's kind of the only real play, because the other two would be, you know, Ukrainian stock market, which even before the war was just never very active. Now it's kind of all over the place. It's just a no-go. You know, it's very different than the US, where if I was going to tell you to invest in the US, you know, even if it was, you know, during or after war, I would say just buy index funds. But that's just unfortunately not an option in Ukraine. People put their money in US dollars and in real estate.
And the real estate that you're talking about, you own two pieces of property right now. You have a place in the center of Kyiv, and then mm-hmm. you also have a place in, remind me of the name, Johnny.
Kharkiv,
yes. That was essentially just going to be an Airbnb rental for you, a short-term rental to make some extra money. It was going really well. You got it for a great discount, and then your Kyiv place was going to be your main residence. What are the values? So you bought those, about 18 months ago? And what are the values of when you bought them 18 months ago to currently?
Okay, so my place in Kharkiv, I have no access to it. There's been a lot of fighting around there, a lot of shelling. So the city itself is really badly damaged. Thank God in the last couple of weeks, Ukraine has taken it back. I don't know if my unit is damaged at all. I think it's actually okay. I had a friend drive by to check it, but they say they basically locked the front door so nobody can get in the building. So that could be a total loss. But I'm hopeful that it's okay. That was a great Airbnb. The one in Kyiv luckily completely survived. Russia never was able to get into the center of Kyiv, mainly because Ukraine flooded their own bridges or destroyed their own bridges and then flooded the farmland around it, essentially creating a moat so Russia never came into the center. That's completely okay. And as for like rental prices right now, rent is cheap. Everything's half off just because, you know, there's no tourists, there's no business people coming in. And also people also realize that people don't have that much money. So rental prices are super low, but the property prices actually haven't changed that much. You'd be surprised.
So there are still active listings out there. And what are you seeing in those price changes?
Yeah. So the only ones that have actually gotten cheaper are the ones that are either, you know, $1 million plus, kind of owned by the super rich of the world. A lot of them are no longer in Ukraine. Maybe they're, some oligarch from some other country or some businessman from another country. Or that was kind of just, you know, money that was tied up there. Those prices have gone down a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if you can get those for half off. And I've seen listings. I actually had a friend try to buy a place that I think was marked about 50% off. Beautiful property right in the center, you know, renovated, owned by some rich guy. And the reason why those are cheap is because those people aren't living there. Nobody really needs to live in such a nice place. And they probably fled the country and want to move their money. The places that are more affordable, really anything 100 grand or less, the prices haven't moved at all. Even though rent is cheap, people want the stability of owning a place. And there just isn't enough supply because so many places got damaged, not really inside Kyiv, but surrounding Kyiv, but also from the other cities. And a lot of people moved into the capital because they know it's a safe place, you know, that's well defended. And if it survived this brutal Russian attack, it'll probably survive in the future as well. And it's the capital, you know, people always want to move to the capital. It's not like in the US where like literally nobody wants to move to Washington, D.C. In Europe, you know, it's like moving to Paris or Vienna or to London. It's, you know, people want to go to the capital.
And the real estate market in Ukraine is really unique. You touched on it with one of the real estate funds that are in Kyiv. John Suggett was his name, episode 183, if you bosses want to go back. There's no mortgages there, or essentially very, very few. So you need to purchase everything with cash.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of the reasons why I know that prices are going to eventually go up, especially if it's, you know, during peacetime, is they've been trying to introduce mortgages for a long time. And they're very, very close to having that be a normal thing. You know, they started kind of rolling it out in smaller waves. And I'm 100% for certain that once this kind of war dwindles down, people are going to be buying houses on credit or apartments on credit.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a major boost to the economy. And I think that's where we would see a lot of Western banks jumping in on this opportunity. Think of getting access to tens of millions of people that have never had a mortgage that now have access to a mortgage for the first time. The amount of money that these financial institutions can make off that is insane.
Yeah. And there's going to be so much money that's going to be, you know, either kind of land lease, like, loaned to Ukraine, or there's also going to be a lot of money that's going to be given to Ukraine to help rebuild. So there's going to be a lot of money flowing in. And that's why I think that as long as Ukraine survives this war, which I think they will, this is going to be a very bright future.
So ideally, Johnny, if I went in, I'm a U.S. citizen and I want to get in on a piece of real estate in Ukraine to potentially have the best return after this is all done, what's my ideal location and type of place?
So it's honestly a little bit of a complicated subject. I mean, first you have to ask yourself, you know, morally, is that doing good for the country? Or is that just taking up places for people to live? And I would say in general, Ukraine wants foreign investment. They need it. So, you know, it's one of those things where it is what it is, right? Where on one hand, by buying up real estate, especially if you're renting out and people are living in there, you know, it's ultimately just bringing money into the country. And then when there's money coming in, people can build more and things can go up. I wouldn't encourage any, you know, big funds to come and buy like thousands of units and just leave them empty. I think that's a bit shady. But yeah, as for individual investors, I would say if you come, there's two kind of big plays. One is the land ownership that's outside of the cities. So anywhere kind of within an hour or more outside of the cities. Those are selling for so cheap. I made two videos kind of touring the place. You can buy places for $7,000 or less, sitting on like a few acres of land. And it, unlike the US, where, you know, you talked about in the last episode with Azure, where the land is valuable and the house isn't. And so people just go in and knock down the $5 million house to build a $10 million house.
It happens all the time in Los Angeles. I see beautiful houses with demolition signs on them, and it just makes me so sad.
Yeah, it's so stupid. But in Ukraine, it's the exact opposite, where the land is worth nothing or worth very, very little. And the structure on top of it, that's what's worth money. Because even though labor is relatively cheaper, you know, it still costs money and materials to build a house. And a good example is I looked at a place, Lakeview, beautiful, you know, huge plot of land. I would say at least an acre or two. They're selling, they were originally listed for $7,000, which is why I went there. And then I found out their neighbor sold it for 25 or 30 grand. But the thing is, the neighbor had a two-story house built on there. So the land itself is probably only worth $7,000. It's just that structure made it, you know, four times the price.
Yeah, that's wild. And just getting someone to build out there, I would think in this chaos after the war is done, good luck, because people are going to be busy and you're probably not high on the priority list.
Yeah, and that's actually why I finished my renovation so early during kind of the middle of the war. First, it was providing jobs for, you know, these contractors that I had known from before the war. You know, like they just had nothing to do because at the time it was too dangerous to build back in like, you know, April, May. I also knew that once this war is over, they're going to be booked and they're going to be so busy that if I need to get something done, I have to get it done now.
Yeah, totally. So I like this idea because we brought it up on the last episode with Azure that, you know, they're looking at possibilities of actually just shipping homes into Ukraine, like these ADU type units. If someone, there's got to be a European equivalent to something like that, where they can, you can get a cheap piece of land, because like I said, land is cheap, and then put some of these structures directly on the land.
Yeah, I think it'd be so cool to do that, because it's, yeah, that would be the ultimate dream, is to be able to just drop in, you know, like shipping container in one of these places. You know, so if the equivalent Azure can open up anywhere in Europe, really, and just drive it through, or ideally they can open up a franchise or something in Ukraine, just 3D
printed. Oh yeah, there you go, just build them right there. Yeah,
yeah, just like they can sell the software, you know, they can sell the 3D printer to them, have it built in, just, you know, shipping is cheap within Ukraine. You know, labor is still pretty cheap. The roads are pretty big. So why not?
I like it. So Johnny's first move, I guess, to investing back in Ukraine is real estate. One thing that comes to mind for me, since, you know, you said you have all these good roads and everything, or you did, that a lot of these roads have been damaged. And even the bridges, you know, connecting Kyiv have all been blown up, except one bridge, I believe. I just got to thinking, because it's been in the news recently here in Los Angeles. So with all nice things that we have, we always have to ruin them here. There's been a lot of drama on this new bridge that just opened in downtown LA. So it's called the Sixth Street Bridge. And every night now they're doing like street racing, illegal stuff. People are having parties on this bridge. It's just a weird story, but it got me to thinking, it's this brand new bridge that is open. Everyone was excited for it. It's about 2/3 of a mile long, which I remember those bridges in Kyiv, and they were long, probably even way longer than that. So Johnny, I just want you to guess the cost of this new bridge in Los Angeles. It's 3,500 feet, so about 2/3 of a mile long. How much do you think just that one bridge costs the city of Los Angeles?
So it's less than a mile long. That's not very long at all. You would think you can do that for $10 million. But if I had to guess, I'm going to think it's something ridiculous like $1 billion.
You're not too far off. $588 million.
Oh, my God.
So just thinking about that and the amount of infrastructure that you're going to need to build in Kyiv, obviously it's going to be cheaper to build there. But just think of the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, that are going to be needed to get the infrastructure back to where it was. I'm kind of thinking of like, how do you invest in that?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be the billions for sure. 100%. How to invest in it? It's going to be kind of more on the government level. Maybe it's going to be something like, you know, at the end of the collapse of the USSR, they had all these privatized, you know, companies, you know,
that's what I was thinking. So what if you're like just a road construction guy here in the US and you want the opportunity to have a really good year? I feel like some of those workers could get hired out there and, you know, make 2-3 times the money like a lot of these contractors do in war zones, like Iraq. You know, they had like oil guys going out there making $300,000 a year, something like that. If you are just like a blue collar worker in the US and you're ready to take on that next level and make some real money, I think there's opportunity there.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And it'll be helping the country as well, because they'll need it. So you're there doing a good thing. And let's face it, if you're out here, you know, working as a, you know, road repair guy making $300,000 a year, you're probably going to end up getting married to some beautiful girl. You're probably going to just love it here. And you're just going to be like, all right, why would I move back to, you know, Ohio, where I'm like, I have a crap life and nobody respects me. When here people are like, yeah, thank you for helping, you know, rebuild our country. And oh, by the way, you're the top, you know, 5% richest people in the country.
That's a good point. If you're really looking to change your life and you're like, you're waking up every morning going, why am I going to this job? I hate it. I'm living in a tiny apartment. There's potential here for you, I think.
Yeah. Also, speaking of tiny apartments, I actually tried to buy a tiny Airbnb, a 45 square meter. You know, it's not that tiny. It's like a one bedroom rental unit in the center of Kyiv. It was an expat. I don't know where he's from, probably the UK or something, posted one of the groups with photos saying, hey, I have a Airbnb rental that has been sitting empty since the start of the war. I'm not going back to Ukraine. Does anyone want to buy it off me? I'll sell it for $50,000. It's fully furnished. You know,
He just wants out.
I wrote so quickly. You know, I probably thought about it for 5 minutes. I like looked at location, I like kind of looked at a few things, and I was like, for $50,000, this is a steal. And I wrote so fast, no response. I wrote to my real estate agent, I wrote her on Telegram, WhatsApp, and I was like, I will buy it. Mm-hmm. And it's by the time she got back to me, it was sold.
Wow. So I mean, there's still interest, you know, to grab these things, but that person is definitely not alone. I can see a lot of people going, what am I doing here? I don't need this place. Just give me something to flip it quick and get out of this. There's going to be more of that coming up for sure, Johnny.
Yeah. If I could find someone like that, I would have, you know, like, I don't know what the term is, but I definitely want to a low ball, like a Ukrainian who, you know, could be living there.
But I was just going to say that, like, if it's someone that's not even from Ukraine, then who cares? But
yeah, yeah.
if it's some person from the UK or US that just wants out, that's on them. But you know, obviously, if it's a Ukrainian, you don't want to like screw them over.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I didn't feel bad buying my Porsche for $10,000, because I was like, oh, this is a British guy. You know, it's a second car. He's trying to get out. So I'm doing him a favor.
Yeah, you were taking on a huge risk too. Sitting a Porsche in Ukraine in the middle of a war, and you're gone half the time.
Yeah,
that's trusting a lot of people.
Yeah, and so when I bought it, there was no fuel for the next 2 months.
And that doesn't exactly get the best mileage.
Yeah, like I guess literally the worst mileage out of every car I've ever seen there. So, I mean, there are deals to be had, because that Porsche now is probably worth at least 50% more, if not double. I wouldn't be able to find it. So that was a risk I was willing to take. And I think if I found another smoking deal, you know, on a place in Kyiv or in Lviv in Western Ukraine, you know, that I can use as a rental and generate some cash from there, I would do it. But I'm not actively looking. I'm just kind of, I told my agents, I said, like, look, if you see something that's like a 50% off deal and then it's renovated, it's like in a good location, you know, shoot it my way. But, you know, I'm not actively looking.
So where do you find these deals at? You just said that one, that other one was online in like some kind of forum. And you obviously have a realtor that's actively working with you. What are some of the best resources to find these deals that aren't just super obvious, posted on wherever it may be, or without actually physically being in Ukraine? Is there a good place that you've seen that consistently kind of shows these deals?
Yeah, and that's the hard part, is there's plenty of Ukrainian real estate, you know, sites, you know, like realtor.co.ua or whatever it is, OLX, which is like the kind of Craigslist with, you know, property deals. But those are going to be like, you know, everything's going to be Ukrainian, number one. They're going to be Ukrainian sellers, and the prices are going to be what I said earlier, where like anything, you know, that's kind of mid-range or lower is going to be the same price as it was before, just because people need places to live. And also because the currency devalued. So the prices technically are the same, but, you know, it is kind of cheaper. But the super oligarch ones, that's going to be what you're going to get the deal on. So, but unless you're willing to spend, I'll say the minimum 500 grand or 300 grand, you know, for like a place that, you know, most people like wouldn't really buy to live in, I wouldn't even bother looking. You know, you'd have to kind of get word of mouth through an expat, through a Facebook group like I found it in, you know, or just kind of through an agent who specializes with Westerners.
That's a good call. I think there's a lot of great online resources, but you really got to dig. I know a lot of the US real estate people too, that's how they find these deals, because they're not going to be advertised on these retail sites at any kind of discount.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's almost kind of silly. Like, it just doesn't make sense, where why would someone want to sell a deal off market and get significantly less money? You know, a really good example is my hotel room here online. It's $150 a night, but for the weekend. But in person, because we had paid, you know, I think it was like $70 or, you know, something, I said, hey, can I extend, you know, for a few more nights over the weekend? And she's like, yeah, sure. And before I asked her, you know, can I get it for the same rate, she already offered me a discount for staying longer. And I was thinking, this doesn't make any sense. Like, it should be double the price, but, you know, because it was off market and I'm already here, she's like, all right, I'll give it to you for, you know, for 60 quid, which is like 70 bucks.
Yeah. And they don't have to pay the Airbnb fees and stuff and just going direct. So I've worked out deals like that too, where you just hit them up and be like, hey, can stay a little bit longer and I'll give you some cash instead or something like that. There's always deals to be made off market.
Yeah. So those are where deals are to be made kind of everywhere in the world, including Ukraine during the war zone. Honestly, I really can't, I can't recommend to anyone who's never been there to go and start buying real estate, but I can recommend, you know, if you've kind of wanted to leave the US and you wanted to move somewhere, you know, and it is one of the few places left in the world where you can actually, you know, own a place in the center of a big city for, you know, 150 grand, you know, or you can live an hour or two outside of the big city and have an acre of land for 5 grand. I mean, like, where else can you find that?
Not anywhere in the United States, I'll tell you that. So I have a question though too, Johnny. So to kind of calm anyone's fears about how their life would be affected, say they want to move to Ukraine, whether part-time, full-time, whatever it may be, they're in the middle of a war right now. Johnny, you've been there a good amount of the time while this war has happened, and it doesn't seem like access to things that you need to survive are super limited. You've had electricity, as far as I know, pretty much the whole time. The internet is faster than mine in Los Angeles. the food situation, you know, there's less options, but I don't think anyone's scared they're going to run out of food. What has everyday life kind of looked like as far as access to the essentials?
Yeah, so McDonald's actually just reopened this week. So,
oh, you were mad about that. So
yeah, I was pissed. Yeah, so that's a good sign of everything going normal again. Western Ukraine, you know, like Lviv, which is kind of the big city in the west, they've never really had any, you know, any issues with anything. Like, I mean, besides McDonald's closing, but everything else was open this entire time. The war never physically went there. Everything was completely, you know, as normal as it could be, right? In Kyiv itself, the city, yeah, we never had any, you know, outages. We never had anything, you know, kind of missing. But the cities that did actually have, you know, the active Russian, you know, occupation, they were completely fucked. I mean, like, mm-hmm. the girl I'm traveling with right now, she spent an entire month without heating, without water, without electricity. So it's kind of like the luck of the draw. I mean, like, if you happen to have been in a city where Russians occupied, you went through literal hell. It's what you picture a war to be like. You know, while if you were lucky enough to be in Kyiv or in the Western Ukraine, you saw it on TV, and so it still affected you, but, like, you know, like, day to day didn't affect you at all.
And I think Ukraine was in a pretty good place as far as their infrastructure as being self-sufficient before this all went down, because their energy, I just looked it up, over half of Ukraine's energy is produced within the country through nuclear power. So they weren't reliant on other countries for energy, especially electricity. We're seeing problems with that right now in, like, Germany and other parts of Europe, where they're actually restricting they're threatening, where was it? Somewhere in Scandinavia, they're threatening to put you in prison if you heat your home over, like, 67 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. So there's a real energy crunch in a lot of Europe because they're reliant on Russian oil. And Ukraine really didn't need that. And food, we've brought up agriculture a ton of times. Ukraine is one of the biggest agricultural spots in all of Europe. Tons of farmland, things like that. So Ukraine is in a good place to be self-sufficient when all this is over, to provide things within their own country.
Yeah, I think in general, Ukraine can survive. The only thing that, you know, like, you know, I think Ukraine didn't have or got destroyed, I think a lot of it was more they got destroyed. Like, Russia targeted like oil refineries, for example. That's why Ukraine had a problem with gasoline, with power even. Like, Russia's literally, you know, targeting the nuclear power plants.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah. So, you know, nuclear energy has a lot of kind of negative connotations to it because it's so risky. But when it works and it works correctly, you know, and there isn't a external factor, nuclear energy is very, very efficient and very clean. So it's actually one of the greenest forms of energy. It just, unfortunately, when something goes bad, like a, you know, what was that? The tsunami that happened in Japan, or a crazy neighbor like Russia trying to bomb it. That's when things can be very dangerous.
Yeah, you know, a Chernobyl, Three Mile Island here in the U.S. Fukushima was the one in Japan. But nuclear power needs a new marketing department because it gets a bad rap. We're fighting with that here in the U.S. too. Nuclear is probably one of our best energy options. I think we've come to realize that the solar and the wind power just isn't quite as far as we'd hoped it would be. And we just extended, thankfully, our last nuclear plant here in California. They were talking about shutting it down, and our power grid can't even contain what we have right now with that nuclear power plant in play. So I think people are starting to come around on that and realize that it got a bad rap for a long time.
You know what nuclear power reminds me of is like a Marvel movie where they find like this, like a soul stone or something that contains like all the power in the world. But then you have all these evil people who like try to take it, and you have these
protectors. And they can use it to kill everyone, or it can save everyone.
Yeah, that's literally what nuclear power is. Like, if you have it set correctly and nobody's fucking with it, it's just free, unlimited energy.
Well, the Marvel movies are like the most popular movies in the world. So if we can get some of their campaign people from Marvel over to the nuclear commission, I think that might do them some good.
Yeah, and have Homer Simpson stop working that power plant, because that also made a bad name.
Give him some donuts, distract him, and take over his job.
Yeah, so it's a crazy time we live in. I'm excited to listen to this episode again in a year or two, and to see how things played out in Ukraine with the war itself, but also with investments. But if I was a betting man, And I guess I kind of am because I am invested in Ukraine. I would say that this time next year, so September 2023, the war is going to be over. Ukraine would have won. Russia's economy is going to be down the toilet. There's going to be a ton of investment in Ukraine, you know, and prices, everything going to go up in Ukraine. It's going to be billions of dollars investment, and things going to be on the up and up.
All right. Well, that's on record, Johnny. I hope that is the case. Much more to talk about on this topic. I'm sure we're going to have future episodes on Ukraine on a regular basis. Johnny's our inside guy. He's on his way back there. Hopefully you're going to have your permanent residency. And then that means you can, you're free to go wherever then, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of do that now anyways. I have a 3-year temporary residency, but you know, my home is my home. I like it, you know? So unless I had a, Azure 3D printed home and a plot of land somewhere, you know, there's nowhere else for that I want to go. And I'm tired of living on Airbnbs.
Good to hear. Well, I wish you safe travels back into Ukraine, Johnny, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right. Thank you, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. Leave a review on the podcast apps. And yeah, we'll see you guys on the next one. Be safe.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.